episode 7 of Admins of Atlassian podcast. My name is Mark. Today's topic is about Jira licenses. If you listen to episode 6, which I discussed Jira Core and Jira Software, we kind of dived down into how the licenses are structured for the newly appointed application. Prior to that, I was kind of working on this episode and pulling my thoughts together to see what I wanted to talk about, some things that I've ran into, and I wanted to share that for new users coming onto the platform and kind of deep dive into this particular area. So as we know, the dark side of licensing, if you're an experienced tool administrator, one of the things that you know that can be very frustrating is the licensing model. Now, some companies have varying licensing models that carry over from the heyday, in which there would be pretty much a license type for any sort of situation, whether it deemed it or not. This will include, as you know, your seat license or named license. This license ties to a specific person or a user, or your concurrent license, which is used by a particular person or user when they're in the application, and it releases automatically once that user signs out of the application or their session expires. That is concurrent licenses. Some vendors have taken to creating other licenses types just so they can kind of nickel and dime the customer to get more money out of them. This can range from licenses being for the region or country that you're in, global licenses, international licenses, state licenses, local licenses, and depending on your need and your discussions with your procurement team of, you know, if you have users that reside offshore, then you have to use this type of license. Or if you have users within your local area of business, then they must use this type of license. Each license is more expensive than the other. And pretty soon you rack up a pretty large amount to purchase licenses that ultimately get thrown into a single pool within the license server, which has no way of actually discerning who is in what location, if they're offshore, if they're a global or international user. That doesn't matter. The only thing that it can decipher is if the user is a seated or named license, if the license is dedicated to that specific user ID, or if it's a concurrent license or a floating license, if you will, the license will go to whoever's logged within the system. Then along came Atlassian. In their beginning, they were very bootstrapped for resources. They didn't have the money to hire a sales team. So what they did was decide on what a fair price was for their particular software, and they threw it up online. So you kind of had a shopping cart experience in which you saw it, you wanted it, and you added it to your cart and purchased it with a credit card. And that was it. You chose the licensing bundle that matched your needs. And you purchased it. You didn't have to haggle around in pricing. You didn't have to deal with any sales folk or go through any sales pitches just to get an idea of what the pricing is for that license. Now, Atlassian sells licenses by bundles or tiers, if you will. So if you were to look at their core application set, you will see bundles of 10 users, 50 users, 500 users, 10,000 users. Whichever matches your need for user base, you would purchase that license. And each one will be varying in its price range. For maintenance, whatever you purchase that license for, your maintenance will be half the cost that following year. Now, plugins are the exact same way, though there's one exception in regards to using plugins. If you purchase a core bundle of 2,000 licenses for Jira, then your plugin that you purchase, such as Portfolio or Tempo Timesheets, for example, those plugin license tiers must match what your base license is for Jira. So if you purchase a Jira Software license of 2,000 users, then your Tempo license must be 2,000 users. What about Jira applications? In the last episode, episode 6, in which I talked about Jira Core and Jira Software, I discussed how Atlassian has changed Jira to be a platform with applications built on top. And again, those applications are Jira Core, Jira Software, and Jira Service Desk. As we talked about their licenses, you notice it was handled differently than how it currently is handled today with plugins. With Jira applications, the management appears to be different. You can have a Jira Core license tier of 2,000 users, for example, and then you can add the Jira Software application on top and theoretically choose only 500 user license tier. The main difference with this is because Jira Core and Jira Software and the Jira Service Desk applications, their licenses are managed via Jira Groups. So to give access to a particular portion of that application, to give a user access to the Jira Software application so that they can take advantage of the Agile functionality, you must assign that user to the Jira Software Users group. That is how the three Jira applications are managed for access. When explaining this to users about the difference between Jira Core and Jira Software, and kind of a heads up to other admins on things they need to look at or investigate when they're upgrading to Jira Core or to Jira Software, the first natural question that I get is, will plugins work the same? Unfortunately, the way the plugins are managed today will continue to be managed that way with Jira Core and Jira Software. Meaning, if you purchase a base amount for Jira Core or Jira Software, then your plugin must match that base Jira license tier. Now, this kind of creates two issues: inflexibility in the marketplace for licensing and the inability to maintain access to certain plugins and functionality. With the way that it works with the Jira Core and Jira Software applications, you can manage that access, who has access to that specific functionality via the Jira groups. With plugins, that's not the case. For most plugins, if you purchase a plugin, you're going to have to identify who can see that plugin and notify your end users of either a new menu option or some other type of change because it's applied to all users within that instance. All users have access to that particular plugin feature, whether they need it or not. One example of this and where it differs and where I first encountered this many years ago was using Balsamiq for Confluence. Now, Balsamiq plugin is a mockup editor where you can do screen mockups of what a particular form or website will look like. They handle their licenses in two different ways. First, you can purchase the license via the Atlassian Marketplace. Due to the developer guidelines and how the licensing model is handled within the marketplace, if you purchase the Balsamiq license through the marketplace, then it must match the base license tier for Confluence. So if you had a 10,000 user Confluence license tier, then you would have to purchase a 10,000 user Balsamiq license tier. Alternatively, if you purchase the Balsamiq license from the vendor themselves, then you could choose a different licensing tier. So if you had a 10,000 user Confluence license tier, then you can purchase a 50 user license tier for Balsamiq. Access to this was managed through a group called Balsamiq Users. So other users could not see any of the mockup functionality or options within the drop-down menus when creating a Confluence page. They could only see this once you added the user to the Balsamiq Users group. This same technique is applied with Jira Core and Jira Software access. In the end, compared to other applications that you may use or other software that you may use, the Atlassian licensing model is much easier, in which you purchase your license tier. But with the advent of Jira Core, Jira Software, and Jira Service Desk being applications on the Jira platform, it introduces an alternative method or make known an alternative method for how licenses is handled. And so then it makes you think if the core functionality will be there to provide that to vendors and how they license their software so that they may not be hooked into providing license tiers for plugins that don't require it. An example would be a plugin that adds a workflow validator or some other workflow function. The license tier is questionable as you're the only user interfacing with that plugin or with that functionality, but you must buy it for a wide swath of users. If you're only adding a particular functionality into one single workflow that's used by 5 people, but you have a 2,000 user Jira license, then does it really make sense to purchase a 2,000 user license for that Jira workflow validator plugin? If this is foundational work being put in place to offer that flexibility to vendors and allowing end users to choose the license tiers that make sense to them, it will be very interesting to see how or if vendors are affected by that. Would a change to using groups to manage access to plugins and functionality prompt users that were on the fence or passed by plugins to actually purchase them, or would actually harm the vendors because of that flexibility being offered? I think this will be something very interesting to think about and to kind of keep an eye on in the future as they continue to grow that platform and see what changes or options they allow the developers when licensing their software. And that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening. Anything that I've talked about will be included as a link within the resources section on the blog, adminsofatlassian.com. So be sure to check it out. It includes links to the pricing and payment information for marketplace developers and an example to how Balsamiq currently does their licensing. If you have any questions, be sure to hit me up on Twitter at adminofatlassian. That's admin with no I of Atlassian, or email me at questions@adminsofatlassian.com. And with that, take care.